Let's talk Monday Night History. One of the most popular Australian crime writers of the mid-20th century was a man called Arthur Upfield. I'm sure many people listening would know Arthur Upfield and his work. His best-known creation was the character Napoleon Bonaparte, or Boney, an Aboriginal man working as a detective for the Queensland Police. In his time, Arthur Upfield was hugely popular, something of a household name. Rachel Franks is a librarian from the State Library of New South Wales and joins us now with the story of Arthur Upfield. Rachel, good evening and welcome back to Nightlife.
Hello, how you going?
Yes, no, very well. I read him when I was a kid. Who is Arthur Upfield? He's not the household name that he once was, is he?
No, not at all. And I think a lot of people might have a vague recollection that they read one or two books when they're a teenager. Sort of most crime fiction fans today would have heard of the name or seen him mentioned somewhere. But he has kind of fallen from view a little bit. He was an interesting character himself. So he's born in England in 1890, and his dad decides to send him off to see the world. So he schleps him out to Australia, and he arrives in Adelaide quite young, in 1911. And so he's this really impressionable Englishman on the far side of the world, and he just has to start looking for work.
So he arrives in Adelaide in 1911.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. What sort of work does he end up doing?
Well, I guess if you read it now, it would all sound very romantic, and it ended up being part of the romance of the Arthur Upfield legend, if you like. But I think it would have actually been a really tough time, initially at first, for Upfield. So he finds himself in this very different city to anywhere he's been before, and he answers the call of the bush. So he embraces this idea of adventure that his dad had set up for him, and he becomes obsessed with the outback, and he takes on all sorts of jobs at stations, not so much in South Australia. He sort of makes his way over to New South Wales, and then he heads up into Queensland as well in those early years.
So is he a bushman?
Basically. So some of the jobs he takes on are really short term, you know, a week here or 2 weeks there. A few of them were longer term and gave him a bit more security. But he is literally doing whatever it is that comes along out bush. So he's driving cattle, he's cutting scrub as food for stock. He does a phenomenal amount of fencing on big properties. It's hard work, like it's heavy manual labour. He's on his own for much of the time. And I'm sure as a young English lad, that change in climate must have been quite daunting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as you say, it's quite the adventure. And I guess a lot of young English men must have thought that's the way to see the world. But he goes on another adventure within a few years, doesn't he? Because, after all, war's declared in 1914.
That's right. So quite soon after he's arrived in Australia, he's only been here a few years, so he's still a man in his early 20s. And as you know well, there was this ridiculous campaign that war was pitched as just another adventure.
That's right.
You know, travel and see the world or parts of it. And for some people it was this opportunity to go back to the mother country or the country that their parents had come from and they had never seen. And then for people like Upfield, it was an opportunity to actually go home. So he does that. He signs on. He becomes a driver. He's sent to the Middle East. He ends up in Gallipoli. He does all these things that, you know, goes to all these places that we're so familiar with from the history books. Mm.
Does he serve on the Western Front?
I don't think so. I think he sort of stays towards the Middle East. Mm. I know he does some time in France, mm-hmm. but I'm not quite sure how close to the front he was. He also spent time in comparative safety in England. But there's that sort of, you know, as well as saying the world, there's this idea that a lot of young soldiers would meet a girl, and he did that too, and he meets an Australian nurse, Anne Douglas, and they get married at the Australian consulate in Egypt when he's still there.
All right. There's still no books yet, is it? The war ends. He comes back to Australia with his wife, Anne, and they have a son, James Arthur, but it's not especially happy. They don't have any money. So is this when he starts writing?
He does. So he's sort of doing a bit more bush work. He's trying to earn some money through journalism. His wife starts doing some private nursing to try and earn an income. So they're actually spending a lot of time apart. But he does start slowly working on these detective novels, and he's drawing on his experiences in the bush. And it's still not enough money, certainly in those early days, as many writers who have tried to get a good gig would know, you know, sort of breaking into any sort of market is really hard. So Upfield actually ends up on a stint patrolling that really famous number one rabbit-proof fence in Western Australia.
Oh, so the big long one, yeah.
So it's like 1,800 kilometres long or something ridiculous. So he's working as part of a team to keep that fence operational.
Okay, so he sort of enjoys this work, doesn't he? And he works on his writing. He warns friends against getting married. He says marriage is no good. Makes
yeah,
it suck.
He he wasn't happy. I think he preferred that idea of isolation and that sense of freedom that the bush could,
So he has a big breakthrough, doesn't he? He gets a novel published.
He does, and then his second novel actually comes out while he's on the rabbit-proof fence, and it's his first novel with Napoleon Bonaparte. Mm-hmm. So this is the Barrackee Mystery, and it comes out in 1929, and it's kind of interesting in that he wrote this detective novel, and he had at the centre of that book a very traditional white middle-aged kind of middle class, upper working class male as the central detective. So it was really quite traditional and would have been a book, apart from the setting, that most people would have read before, or that type of book. And then he's reminded of a man, Leon Wood, who worked for Queensland Police as a tracker. And he decides that he would actually recraft his character upon this Indigenous man. And, you know, it was just such a genius move, and Upfield became incredibly popular because he presented readers with this really different character.
Yes, it is. I mean, it wouldn't be attempted today for all sorts of reasons particularly.
No.
But anyway, but tell us a little bit about Boney and the character.
Well, he's really unusual. I mean, as you say, unusual for crime fiction today, which is kind of strange because, you know, crime itself impacts all of us. So crime fiction as a reflection of that, you would think, would more broadly represent different groups as victims and solvers of crime. But, you know, Boney is this quite extraordinary individual. He's an Aboriginal man at the centre of these stories, and he really does control them. And in some ways, he's still that ordinary detective, the ordinary copper. He's married, he's got three children, he's got a university education, which in of itself would have also been unusual for that type of character in that
period. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Because he's an Indigenous man, he has this really strong point of difference, and he becomes quite exceptional. So he's given all the hard cases, you know, all the stuff that no one else can solve, and he travels out of Queensland to also solve these impossible crimes in other places. And some of the stereotypes of the mid-20th century detective are still there. So he's sort of, you know, a bit anti-authoritarian, gives his bosses a hard time.
Is there... we're in a sensitive territory here, but the character itself, would we regard it as being written in a racist way today?
That is a complicated question. Look, in one way, yes. So Upfield is anti-racist as he's writing this stuff. He displays a really genuine respect for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples. He acknowledges connection to country. He acknowledges the knowledge systems and traditions. And he really does see these as different to, and in some cases actually greater than, Western ways of living. So he's not just repeating the more traditional dismissive treatment that can be given to Indigenous characters and, you know, that treatment that we still see today. But at the same time, Upfield puts into print some truly atrocious stuff. Like, he says things that were not okay in the mid-20th century, and they are certainly not okay now. And, you know, even if you haven't read the books, you've just picked one up. Often on the front cover, it says Boney the half-Aboriginal detective.
Yeah, see, I remember, and that's what I remember when I was reading him as a kid. Yeah, I remember as a kid reading it about him is that he's a half-Aboriginal. You know, which is a term we would not at all use today.
No, so deeply offensive.
And even at the time was offensive, wasn't it?
Yeah, and there's this, you know, there's a bit of cultural appropriation. Like, I think he claims a deeper understanding of some practices and knowledges than is really okay. But then to contrast that, he actually showcases some of those racist attitudes. And so Boney actually takes quite a bit in most of the books, but he's able to, as he's positioned as so superior, he kind of twists that and uses that racism to his own advantage. So there's this interesting kind of pattern, if you like, that if you're not really interested in solving the puzzle, you can sometimes just look out for the most racist character in a book, and they will usually be, in Upfield's world, less. So they're less intelligent, they're less kind, they're less attractive, and they're also less likely to be one of the good guys at the end of the novel. So if somebody's really violently racist, you can almost put him at the top of your list of suspects, which I think is really interesting.
Did Upfield actually know anything about Aboriginal culture at all, or was he just writing what he'd read about?
I think he did read, but I think he also spent time and he actually actively engaged with Indigenous men that he met out bush, and I think he took snippets and he tried to understand, and I think that that's what often comes through in the books. There's not this deep knowledge that as a, you know, a white man he can't have, but there is an appreciation there and an attempt to sort of highlight that this white way of doing everything is not always correct.
Rachel Franks is with us, the librarian from the State Library of New South Wales. We're talking about the crime writer Arthur Upfield, who'd been known to older readers as, well, he was a very popular Australian crime writer in the mid-20th century. And his key character, of course, Napoleon Bonaparte Boney, the Aboriginal man working as a detective for the Queensland Police. It was a successful formula for Upfield, wasn't it? I mean, but Boney's a great character. Does the black man, as it were, come out on top, or is it always a white man's world?
I think it's kind of like You know, those hard-boiled novels that came out of the US where you've got the downtrodden detective,
Yeah.
you know, they come as close to winning as their circumstances will allow. And I think we see this in the Boney novels as well. You know, he often gets the last line. There's this really interesting, you know, as Hercule Poirot might gather people in a library in a Christie novel and, you know, declare how the murder happened. There's an added twist when Boney does it because suddenly this Aboriginal man who was usually working undercover, you know, he'll go out to a station as a horsebreaker or as just another worker, and then suddenly he is revealed to be the great detective. And so you see character reactions responding to the solving of the crime, but the greater reveal is actually this man that they may have belittled at some point throughout the text is actually their better. And it's really fascinating to sort of see that. And even though Upfield is, he's problematic in many ways, you know, his treatment of minority groups, of women, certainly comes to the fore. But he does make us stop and think a little bit. And I think that that's, you know, one of the things that you really want out of a good piece of fiction.
Sure. It was a successful career for him, wasn't it? There are nearly 30 books in the Boney series, doesn't it? Now,
That's right, I
presumably
think
Upfield makes
29.
Upfield makes well, he makes a good living off it, I presume, doesn't he?
He sure does. They're translated, they're popular all over the world. People are intrigued by the main character, and there's a bit of tourism about it. So he, for some of his flaws, he's actually a really good writer. And I think that he's actually able to capture that Australian bush and make you feel like you're there. You know, you feel the dry and the heat and the scrub, and you see plagues of rabbits. And it's kind of this transportation, if you like. You're going back in time into this odd place. And, you know, it's sort of one of the reasons he was so very successful overseas, because these books were like, they were like tourism. And you got a murder puzzle as well.
Yeah, can you are they still available today?
Look, they are. You can usually pick them up pretty easily secondhand. They have all been reprinted at various times. And as you say, there are quite a few available. So that first one comes out in 1929. Upfield dies in 1964, but his final book, The Lakefrome Monster, is finished and published posthumously, and that comes out in 1966. So there are lots of Boney books out there to find.
Yeah, sure. As I say, it's not you wouldn't really attempt it today, but it's a body of work for sure. Rachel, terrific to talk on the life and times of crime writer Arthur Upfield. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.